Let's head to the United States, and our correspondent is Danielle Kurtzleben, who is political correspondent with NPR's Washington desk. Hi, Danielle.
Hey there.
We're getting closer to the midterms, much anticipated. How is the campaign unfolding?
Oh, well, it's quite close. And as I know that I have updated your listeners before, it's looking better for the Democrats than it had earlier this year. But it's going to be tight. When we look at what Congress is going to look like starting next year, it seems like it's going to be relatively closely split, especially in the Senate. And the reason that it's going to be closer than we thought is largely abortion. I have been out on the campaign trail quite a bit. I just got back from Wisconsin, and that is what voters are talking about. Now, one other big key thing, though, that is happening is that ahead of the elections this year, candidates either aren't debating or aren't sure whether they're debating, which is a real break with the past and with just general political norms here.
How so?
Oh, so there was a new analysis from news outlet Politico here that showed that as of earlier this month, in only two Senate races that were happening this year, candidates had agreed to have debates. And in the rest of the Senate races, they were either still haggling over it or just weren't going to have them, or were going to have fewer than in past years. It's just, and there are a variety of reasons, and it's happening on both sides of the aisle in places like, and it's not just in the Senate either, I should also say here, this is in governor's races, House races, Senate races. It's really everywhere.
Are they giving reasons for this? Is it simply that the atmosphere is so volatile / vitriolic? Is it that there's an absence of any interest in focusing on actual issues? What's happening?
You know, there are the stated reasons, and then there are the reasons you can glean from just political logic. Now, the stated reasons can be very, there's a broad range of them. For example, in the Arizona governor's race, the Democrat, Katie Hobbs, has said she won't debate the Republican, Kari Lake, because Katie Hobbs fears that debates would allow Kari Lake to spread disinformation, would give her a platform for spreading conspiracy theories, for talking about thinking that Donald Trump didn't win, or thinking that Donald Trump did win the last election, that sort of thing. In other races, their candidates will say, you know, I think the voters just have enough information. That has happened in the Wisconsin, I'm sorry, that has happened in the Wisconsin governor's race. But there's also just the things that you can glean, like I said, which is, first of all, yes, you said a volatile political atmosphere. I mean, it's certainly true that candidates are doing a cost-benefit analysis, and there can be a great cost to doing a debate if you're a candidate, especially an inexperienced candidate, because if you commit a gaffe, that gaffe gets cut down to a 6-second snippet passed around Twitter. It can make voters laugh at you, not want to vote for you, or also can make donors not want to give you any money and can just bleed your campaign dry. Furthermore, there's all, when you think about the potential benefit, yes, you might score a few points on your opponent, but voters in our country are increasingly on the team that they're on. They know who they're going to vote for. They know how they lean. So a lot of candidates perceive, probably correctly, that there are diminishing return, that there are fewer returns to a debate than there used to be, that there are other ways to turn out the voters that they want, and that they don't need a debate to convince those voters. So this is not to say this is great for democracy. It means less information out there for voters. But campaigns are in the interest of winning.
What are the House GOP members saying about what they will do if they win in November?
Yes, this is something that they came out with this week. It's called the Commitment to America. It's a very broad document, and it outlines four big pillars of what they would want to do if they won the House. Those pillars are economy, safety, individual freedom, and government accountability. Now, One way to look at this is a plan, but as far as plans go, it is not very specific. It has very broad ideas. You know, we're going to fight inflation. We're going to expand U.S. manufacturing. It doesn't give a lot of details on how, but you can also see this as a campaign document ahead of the midterms, a way of saying to their voters, look, if we win the House, this is what you can expect from us. These are our priorities. And these are very much red meat Republican base priorities, because it's not just cutting taxes, cutting government spending, which are very, you know, common Republican tenets. It's also some culture war things. For example, we want to impose restrictions on abortion. We want to impose restrictions on transgender women and girls participating in sports, which has become a very big culture war battle here. So that is what they came out with, and it is going to be weighing on voters' minds, I would imagine.
And just finally today, Danielle, voting has started, and how is it being carried out? Is this partly an evolution given since the COVID era?
Yes, most definitely. So just to give your listeners some numbers here, in 2020, just around 30 or 31% of voters cast ballots in person on election day, so only around a third. Whereas in 2016, just over half cast ballots in person on election day. In 2018, it was about 60%. So that very much dropped, of course, largely as a result of COVID and COVID-related policies. And we expect that to continue this year. Now, turnout tends to be lower in midterms than presidential elections. But in a lot of states have maintained the policies that they opened up around COVID, where you can either mail in your ballot or go to your local election office and vote a week, two, three, even four ahead of time. So that has definitely started. And I think one big question is how those policies look in the years to come, because as I know I've also told your listeners in the past, there is a lot of wrangling in states over how much to open up those different types of voting, alternative ways of voting to in person on election day, because of fears not always well-founded about voter fraud.
So where does that leave us with contested results coming out of your midterms, God forbid?
Right, and that is one big thing. In close races, this does mean that it can take a bit longer for us to know who won. I mean, your listeners may remember that in 2020, we waited a few days after the presidential election before we knew that Joe Biden had won, because it was a relatively close race. And in close races, you're going to have local officials, state officials, counting ballots, not just in person, of course, because those are easily tallied, but the mailed-in ballots, the absentee ballots, all of that. Those are going to take a bit longer to count, to verify, which means that we may not know what the House and Senate makeup look like for another few days or even longer after Election Day. Sometimes these recounts or these counts can go on for quite some time.
Thank you, as always. Danielle Kurtzelbaum-Bin is our commentator, our correspondent from the US today.